John chapter 6. We're just going to look at the first part of the chapter. If you come back tonight, we're actually going to look at the rest of the chapter. But we're going to start. This is a very familiar passage for almost everybody. It's a story you learn about in Sunday school, and probably preachers preach on it all the time, but it's the feeding of the 5,000. And this morning we're going to focus specifically on the miracle that Jesus did when he fed the 5,000 people. And tonight we're going to look at what happened afterwards. What happened after he fed the 5,000 that next day? It's very interesting to see what the people wanted and how Jesus responded to them. But so Jesus came to this earth for a reason, didn't he? He had a very specific reason for coming to earth. The reason Jesus came to the earth was to die on the cross so that he could save all, he could pay the price for all of the sins of everybody in this world. That's why he came. However, while he was here on this earth, he did a number of miracles. And those miracles were wondrous, amazing things, weren't they? But they weren't the reason he came. They were to prove who he was so that people would believe when he did the thing that he came to do. But today we're going to look at this feeding of the 5,000. And there's nothing wrong with miracles, is there? And we still see them today. Sometimes we see someone that we know that the doctors say is going to die, and God for some reason chooses to heal them in ways that the doctors can't even figure out. They're like, well, I don't know what happened. And that's amazing, isn't it? But we need to be careful that we don't let the physical miracles of this world, the physical miracles that God and Jesus have done in this world, overshadow the truth, the real reason that he came, and the purpose for his coming in the first place. So we're going to look at the feeding of the 5,000, and in this passage we will see Jesus provide for the physical needs of many, and then we're going to see them try to make him their king. And as we look in this passage, and especially tonight as we look in the rest of the chapter, the reason they wanted him as king wasn't really the right reason. They had the wrong motives for wanting him king. They were focused on the wrong thing. And so we're going to see how Jesus responds to that today and tonight. And so first, let's just read the passage. It says, after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles which he did on them which were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this he said to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, well, there is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many? And Jesus said, make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed it to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto the disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together, and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men, which they had seen, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, this is of a truth that prophet which should come into the world. When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. So first we see that the setting is by the Sea of Galilee in a wilderness. So Jesus goes across the sea, and then it actually says that he went up into a mountain. Now, I don't think he's all the way, it's not like Mount Everest where he's all the way up on the crest of Mount Everest. No, but it was a very hilly place. And Jesus often would take his disciples to remote places like that to get away from the crowds so that he could teach them one-on-one things that the crowds just weren't ready to hear. Well, the crowds followed him, and it says the multitude. So he was sitting with his disciples, he's teaching them, and it says the Passover was about to happen. So it's getting close to the Passover, so a lot of people are thinking about the Passover, and some of them might have even been heading to Jerusalem to partake of the Passover. And a great multitude followed him. And it says why they followed him. It says, and a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles, which he did on them that were diseased. So the reason they followed Jesus was not because of what he had been teaching. They were following him because they had seen him do miracles. And if you look just back in John chapter 5, you see the account of when Jesus healed a lame man by the pool of Siloam, of Bethsaida. Jesus had come to this pool, and this was a pool where a lot of sick and crippled people would gather around this pool because every once in a while an angel would come and trouble the waters, and whoever got in the water first was healed. Well, if you're lame, do you think you're going to get in that pool first? Probably not. He can't walk, so he's going to be a little bit slow. So Jesus walked up to him and said, do you want to be healed? And I goes, well, of course I do, but there's no one here to put me in the water quick enough. And then Jesus healed him on the Sabbath, but Jesus healed a lame man. This was a man who was lame from birth. And Jesus just said, take up thy bed and walk. And the guy picked it up and started walking. Now, besides the fact that he healed his legs, think about how much of a miracle that is. If someone is bedridden for 10 years, can they just get out of bed and walk? Even if the problem that caused them to be bedridden is fixed, even if they've been healed of the illness, they just can't get up and walk because their muscles are atrophied and weak. This guy had never walked in his life. Have you ever watched a toddler learn to walk? That's what he should have looked like when he got up and started to walk, because he'd never learned to walk. He'd never learned to balance. And yet the Bible says he just picked up his bed and walked away, like he'd been walking all of his life. And so that's an incredible miracle, isn't it? Whoa! And everyone's like, wow, that guy can do some stuff. Let's follow him. Let's see what else he does. They're looking for a show. They're looking for something to watch. They, you know, wow, this guy's doing, I want to be able to, you know, I want to be able to my grandkids. You know, when I was your age, I saw some guy, he healed a blind man. And he cleansed a leper. And so they were looking for another show. It says they followed him because of the miracles that he did, and they wanted to see more miracles. And so then Jesus goes off with his disciples, and the multitude follows him. And so Jesus is standing there, and he looks around, and he sees this huge multitude, and he turns to Philip, and he says, so where can we go to get food for all these people? And then it says Jesus wasn't asking Philip because Jesus wanted an answer. Jesus already knew what he was going to do. Jesus was asking Philip to test him. Have you ever wondered why God, Jesus in the Bible, sometimes asks people questions? Jesus already knows all the answers, right? So why should he ask? You know, why did God tell Abraham to sacrifice Isaac? God knew that Abraham would do it, so why did God have to ask Abraham to do it? Why does God have to ask us to do anything to prove anything? Because he already knows what we're going to do, right? Because if God doesn't ask us, then we won't go through that process and grow through it. You see, God might have known that Abraham would have obeyed him in that instance, but then Abraham would never have known necessarily, and Abraham would have never grown through the step of faith that he had to take. See, just because God knew Abraham would take that step of faith doesn't mean that Abraham would gain the benefit of it if Abraham never did it. See, God often asks us questions or asks us to do things, and it says he's testing us. It's not that God's testing us to see what we will do. He's testing us so that we see what we will do, so that we can grow through the experience. And so Jesus asks Philip, well, how are we going to feed all these people? And Philip's like, well, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient to feed this crowd. I mean, 5,000 people. Just men. It says 5,000 men. There could have been women and children. There probably were. So who knows, between 5,000 and 15,000 people. That's a lot of food. I mean, think about our potlucks that we have all the time, right? We usually have, you know, between, what, 60 and 100 people come to a potluck? And think about how much food we usually bring for that. We have a lot of food, don't we? Now multiply that by 100. That's about how much you'd need. So we'd need about 100 times the amount of food we have for a potluck. At least 100 times that food. We'd need that much food to feed that crowd. I don't think we could fit that much food in the back room. That's a lot of food, isn't it? And here they are in the wilderness. And Jesus looks at Philip and says, so where are we going to go to get food for all these people? I mean, if I were to go into McDonald's and say, yeah, I need to buy 15,000 hamburgers. Do you think I would get that order, even if I could pay for it? Probably not, because nobody has that many hamburgers just sitting in their back room, right? And so the idea of where to get enough food to feed this crowd, that was quite the conundrum, wasn't it? And so Philip goes, well, I have no idea. But then Andrew, he says, well, there's this lad here with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. What kind of a solution is that? That's enough food to feed the boy, not the rest of the crowd. But see, Andrew was at least giving the options that he saw, even if they didn't make any sense at all. He says, well, we do have 5 loaves and 2 fishes with this boy. And remember, this is a young child. This was supposed to be his lunch. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, I probably eat one meal more than Josiah eats in 2 days, you know. So here he is, and he just says, well, we have this. And, you know, God will sometimes take the little thing that we have to offer, and he'll use it to do something much bigger than we could ever envision. But we have to be willing to use what we have for God to be able to use it. We can't just sit back and say, oh, well, I can't do it. I guess God will just have to take care of it. No, God calls us to act, to do what we can with what he has given us, and then he will provide the increase. And that young boy gave his lunch to Jesus, even though there's no way he could. I mean, everybody might be, I mean, even if they just gave everyone a crumb of food, they probably would have run out before they got to the end. Because that's a lot of people. So then, Jesus, after Andrew, offers this solution that doesn't make any sense. Jesus says, okay, have all the men sit down. So like, wait, what? And you know the other disciples are thinking, what are you doing, Jesus? That's not enough food. That's not enough. But Jesus said, well, have all the men sit down. It says there was a big grassy field for them to sit in. So they all sat down, and then he gave thanks for the food. Before this miracle even occurs, Jesus gives thanks for the provision that God is going to give. I think that's a very important thing for us to see. You know, Jesus knew that God was going to provide because Jesus was God and he was going to do a miracle, right? If Jesus is doing the miracle, why did he need to thank God for it? In fact, if Jesus was God, why did Jesus even have to pray? Because he wasn't doing it for himself, he was doing it for us. He was doing it to show us how to pray, to show us how to live, to show us what we need to be doing. So when he prayed to God, giving thanks for the food that God was about to provide, he was showing the people that we ought to give thanks before God has even done the miracle, before God has even provided. You also see that when we're going through Romans, in Romans chapter 4, it says that Abraham gave glory to God before Isaac was born. Abraham glorified God for the promise before the promise had even been fulfilled to Abraham. And that is a sign of faith. You trust God to take care of you? Well, then, even before he has done so, thank him for doing so. Now, it might not come out the way you think it's going to come out, right? I mean, When Jesus said, how are we going to feed these 5,000? I highly doubt the disciples thought that he was going to do so with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. They were probably more expecting him to drop manna from heaven or something, like it had happened in the past. But no, he did it a different way. But Jesus thanked God, and then he started to break the bread and the fish and pass it out. And that must have been quite the interesting visual experience, huh? I mean, here he's got 5 small loaves of bread and 2 fishes, and he just starts breaking pieces off and filling up a basket and handing it to the disciple, and then breaking more off and filling up another basket and handing it to another disciple. And you're just sitting there, when is it going to end? How? I mean, just a little piece of bread, and he's filling these huge baskets, and they're just passing it out and passing it out and passing it out. And it says that they just kept passing out, and then after everyone was filled, and you know, these people had been walking all day to listen to Jesus talk. They probably hadn't eaten all day. So I'm sure they had hefty appetites, don't you think? You know, when you do a lot of work, you get hungry, don't you? Someone asked me yesterday what I had for breakfast, and I told them, like, whoa, that's a huge breakfast. I said, well, I just had ridden 50 miles. I was hungry because I worked up an appetite. So these people had worked up an appetite, I'm sure, because they're following Jesus. They're walking. Remember, they didn't have fancy cars with air conditionings to get them around. They had to walk pretty much everywhere they went, and so they were hungry. And it says they filled, and after they were filled, they had 12 baskets left over of food. So the leftovers was more than the initial lunch. They had more food left over afterwards than they had when they started. And that was an amazing miracle. Now, do you think the people there were astounded by what happened? Of course they were. They're like, whoa! That guy just fed us all. That's amazing. And it says, they said, he must be that prophet. That prophet. That's a very, what prophet are they talking about? They were talking about the Messiah. They're saying, oh, he's got to be the Messiah, that prophet. And it says, when Jesus perceived that they were going to take him by force and make him a king, which to me, that's just such a weird thing. I'm going to force you to be my king. Normally, isn't it the other way around? I'm your king, you better obey me. No, we're going to force you to be our king. But think about it. What did he had just done? He had just provided food for over 5,000 people out of a small lunch. And if you come back tomorrow, we're going to look at the rest of the passage and we're going to see that this is their motive. So I'm not just coming up with this out of the thin air. But think about this. They're thinking, ooh, if we make him our king, he'll feed us for the rest of our lives. We're not going to have to work anymore. Oh, he'll take care of us. They didn't want to make him king because they wanted him to rule over them. They wanted to make him king so he'd provide for them. So he'd take care of their physical needs. Now, does God take care of our physical needs? He does. He often does. But that's not the primary purpose. That's not what our primary focus ought to be. And so they're saying, let's make him king so he can feed us every day. And it says Jesus just disappeared. Why did Jesus disappear? Because that's not what he came to earth to do. He didn't come to earth to provide for their spiritual, their physical needs. You see, the Jews at this time, many of the Jews were looking for their Messiah, but they were looking for a Messiah that would deliver them physically from the problems of this earth at this time. They were looking for one to come in and overthrow the Roman government and provide for them here and now. They wanted a physical redeemer, a physical savior. Remember, as we've been looking at the physical versus the spiritual, did Jesus come to provide physical salvation? Not really. Jesus came to provide spiritual salvation. What did he talk to the man Nicodemus about? Being born again. Not being born physically, but being spiritually born again. What did he talk to the woman at the well about? Living water. Spiritual water, which would be a spring bubbling up out of us so that we would never thirst again. You see, this food that Jesus fed the 5,000, was it going to satisfy their hunger for the rest of their lives? No, they're probably hungry by dinner time. Because that's how food works, isn't it? Tonight, Jesus is going to offer them food again when we look at the passage tonight. But he's not going to offer them physical food like he's doing in this passage. He's going to offer them a different type of food. And a lot of them are going to be turned off by it. A lot of them are going to say, no, we don't want that, and they leave. Because unfortunately, we too often are so focused on what we want physically, on our physical needs, our physical wants, our physical desires, that we completely miss the spiritual things that God is offering for us. And ultimately, which is more important? The physical things that God can provide for us, that God can do for us, or the spiritual things that he's offering us? But just like this crowd here, they wanted to make him king because they wanted their physical desires met. They weren't interested in what he was teaching. Did you notice that it doesn't anywhere say that they wanted to hear what he had to say? They just wanted to see the miracles. And then when he fed them, they thought, ooh, there's a miracle I like. That's even better than watching him heal someone. He's feeding me. I like that. Let's follow him around forever. As long as he feeds us, as long as he physically takes care of us, so we don't have to do anything, we can just sit around and follow him and he'll take care of every need. Is that the kind of God we serve? Is he just going to take care of us even if we aren't doing what he tells us to do? It's not about our physical needs. Why did Jesus come? He came to this earth to save us from our sins. He came to this earth to offer us spiritual food so that we wouldn't hunger again. He came to meet our spiritual needs, not our physical needs. And when we allow ourselves to get so focused on the physical things, and I'm not saying that the physical things are sin. The world, I mean, our flesh is sinful, but eating is not a sin. We need to eat to live, right? Of course. And we need to do certain things to take care of our bodies. And that's fine. But we need to be careful that we don't get our priorities out of whack. That we don't get so focused on meeting the physical needs in our lives that we forget to allow God to start meeting the spiritual needs in our lives. Because those spiritual things are the things that matter. Those spiritual things are the things that will matter once we die. Because remember, when we talked about Nicodemus, there's the physical birth, and everyone that's physically born will physically die, right? But you have a choice in regards to the spiritual. If you're spiritually born, you will never spiritually die. Perish. But if you are never spiritually born, then you will perish. So in the spiritual things, it works a little differently. And we need to be careful that we don't get so focused on God providing our physical needs that we forget to ask him to provide for our spiritual needs. We have seen how Jesus took an impossible situation, a huge crowd, a tiny lunch, and he made it work. I don't know anybody else who could do that. But why did Jesus do miracles on this earth? Was the purpose just to feed those 5,000? No. Why did Jesus ask the woman at the well for a drink of water? Because he wanted to get talking. He wanted to be able to tell her about the living water that he had that she needed. And so he feeds them. He does this miracle to prove who he is and that he has the power to feed them spiritually. And it was quite an amazing miracle. However, it ultimately pales in comparison with the real work of Christ. You know, God often asks us to do things that we think are impossible, doesn't he? He asks us to do things with, you know, like, we can't do that. I don't have the money to do that. I don't have the talent to do that. Yet we must always remember that if God tells us to do something, he will always make it possible for us to do it. But sometimes we have to step out in faith, start doing the thing that God has asked us to do, and then watch as God takes care of us and helps us finish the task that he has given us to do. Just as he made it possible to feed a multitude from the offering of a small lunch, so also in our lives he can take what we think is completely untenable and use it to work great works in our lives and the lives of those around us. But let's not get so focused on the physical things of the ministry and Christian life and meeting people's needs that we forget the things that are more important, like the multitude. Once they were fed by Jesus, all they could think of was making him king so he could keep providing for their physical needs. And tonight, like I said, we're going to look at what happened the next day. A conversation that Jesus had with these people. It's very interesting. Even though Jesus escaped at the end of the passage we looked at, that's not the end of the story. They weren't so easily dissuaded. They weren't going to let their meal ticket get away. They tracked him down. They demand more food from him. And tonight we are going to look at their demand and Jesus' response. We're going to see them demand physical food. We're going to see Jesus offer them spiritual food. We're going to see how they respond. And the truth is, not everybody's going to respond to the gospel message. But we still have to offer it to them. Because that's what we're called to do. We're not called to save people. We're just called to be witnesses. Let God do the saving.